Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mala!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest Doom Patrol-related podcast, where we talk about all things Doom Patrol.
Hey everyone, I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks, and you can send us emails at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. And we are on Facebook, and we also have a site which is connected to our show, and that's My Greatest Adventure 80, and it's a Doom Patrol blog. And it got picked up by DC Comics, and they stuck it on their website as part of the DC fan sites.
How cool was that?
I know.
Well done, Dougie.
Fully legit. And that's run by Doug Zavisha, and he's a friend of the show, a really good friend, and super proud of you, Doug. I'm doing two thumbs up. Two thumbs up, arms out thrust. Look at that.
I will give you a go you good thing.
Awesome. And the other episodes of the show available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Yes, hello. I'm Mike, and you can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. And while you're on Twitter, you can also check out our sentient show account, Wilfred, who is at WFDPod. And as always, we are proudly brought to you by Comicosity.com.
Yeah, and one of the things on the site, I don't know if you know this about Comicosity, it's a fairly political site, but a political in the right way. So they do a lot of positive reacting to what's going on in the world. Yes. So at the moment, there is an article called Nevertheless She Persisted, which is 20 women standing the test of time, and it's 10 women from comics, mm-hmm. so people like Amanda Waller, and then it's 10 people from real life, so someone like Rosa Parks is amongst those 10. Mm-hmm. It's a great little article by Matt Santori, and makes you think and makes you appreciate strong women, people who fought for rights and the right thing, and also some of the cool characters that are in the comics who aren't cookie cutter, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, well done. So, yeah, that's one of the cool things going on at Comicosity right now.
Excellent.
Anyway, Mike, did you have a week in comics or other things that you want to talk about?
I did have a week in comics. I actually read some comics. My God. What? Look at me. I'm a big boy now.
Really?
I read a couple of issues of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, and that's always good fun. A couple of issues of Wonder Woman. So, I'm finally up to issue 6 of that. She's 5 and 6. So I think I'm only, what, 3 months behind now? I don't know.
50 issues and 3 months behind.
Yeah, yeah. And the first issue of Trinity, which I think is up to issue 5 or 7 now or something. So, and that's by Francis Manapul. And I enjoyed that. That was kind of an interesting start. It reminded me that I've either forgotten or missed something about how Superman in Rebirth came about. Because I believe he died or something, and then it's a different Superman.
Something like that. And yeah. So it's a pre-New 52 Superman.
Yeah, yeah. Because I'm not that big a Superman reader or follower or fan, I kind of glossed over that and thought, oh, I'll get back to it. And now I'm kind of like, oh, yeah. Right, okay. Because I kind of referenced that in this first issue. And I love Manapul's art. He did some great stuff in Detective Comics in the New 52. So that was, that was good fun. And speaking of fun, fantastic art, I actually had a commission piece by our friend Andrea Shockling turn up in the mail today. For a day. She was taking commissions just before the end of 2016. And for some reason, I said, hey, would you be able to do, unsurprisingly, a piece of art featuring the Doom Patrol, but can you do it in the style of The Breakfast Club? So the pose where the kids are all kind of, you know, huddled around and the logo and that. And sure enough, she did it, and it turned out great.
Wow.
thank you very much for that, Andrea. I've put it up online already, so I'll get Wilfred to retweet it later on. But,
I didn't know she was an artist, I must admit.
Well, I think it's kind of been a hidden thing for a while, but she's starting to do a web comic called The Best Year of My Life, which is autobiographical and very interesting. And she's done another short, kind of zine almost called Mum Privilege, which was about coping with the loss of her mother. in real life. So she does some really interesting stuff. So wow. Yeah, that was quite a delight for that to actually turn up in the mail today. So
yeah, I know her best from the Comics Therapy podcast.
Yes.
I don't believe they do anymore, but
no, that ended some time ago, and I do miss that. That was a good fun show.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the podcast. It's kind of deep in a way that I can never manage to be able to connect feelings with issues and a bit of analysis and stuff. Whereas I just tend to talk about things and make jokes. You know me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, how's your week in comics and stuff been, Paul?
I've been watching a lot of movies, catching up with a few flicks. Saw The Revenant, which was a beautiful waste of time.
Right, that's your one up on me. Yep, so I've seen it. Yep.
But comic-wise, I had a little bit of window in my new things to read and was able to get to a reread of something. So I tend to buy books and with the purpose of rereading them. And one that I've had sitting there for ages, like, since about 2014, is The Absolute Top 10.
Ah.
Alan Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so this collects everything related to Top 10 that Alan Moore wrote. So it's got the Top 10 maxi series, and for those of you who don't know what Top 10 is about, it's like a science fiction city populated by superheroes. So everyone, you know, every child in the street is a superhero. Every person driving a cab is a superhero, and there's only so many jobs for superheroes, so they have to, you know, you got cleaners that's a superhero job in this city and things like that. So Top 10 is one of the police precincts. So there are superheroes who are all policemen and they're solving super crimes. So it's a bit like Hill Street Blues, if you're an old bugger like me, crossed with the Justice League. So, but it's really, really good Alan Moore in a way that I don't think Alan Moore has been good for quite some time. And the art, it's like Gene Ha and Xander Cannon. I think they're the artists.
Yes.
It's like they were told, could you draw this comic for us? And they said, how long have we got to do it? And they said, take as long as you want. And that's what they did, because it looks sumptuous. So, and it's the only Absolute I own. So it's Absolute's giant hardcovers, which are oversized. So it's a really nice way to read a comic that's so dense with sort of Where's Wally type level of in-jokes and things like that. So I'm a fan of that, and I'm enjoying coming back to it. And, you know, just some beautiful writing and characterization and some good mysteries and some really funny stuff in there as well. Like, it's quite witty. Yeah.
Nice. So
yes, that's all I've got. But do you think it's time to go down on Darrington Way?
Let's do, please.
Now, every week, issue 5 moves 1 week away from us. I think it's fair to say.
Yes.
We're running up the corridor. We're trying to reach the door, and the door keeps going the same speed as us up the corridor.
And it laughs at us.
Yes. So at the moment, issue 5 is going to come out on the 8th of March. 8th of March.
That's what they've told us so far.
Yeah. I can believe it, actually. I wouldn't put money on it, but I wouldn't say, no, it's not going to happen. It's going to keep getting later.
Right.
Yeah. You seem less certain.
I'll believe it when I'm reading it.
Yep. Yeah. But issue 6 is still on the schedule. It's coming out on the 29th of March, which I'm absolutely certain it will not at this point.
Yeah. I don't... Yeah, nah.
This is the same artist on the same book and the same writer, so there's, you know, there is a reason for these delays, and that reason hasn't changed between these issues. So, you know, but get it right, guys. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel bad.
That's true. Yeah.
Comics as art. These are art. Make them arty. That's my super encouragement. Isn't that good?
Wow. How is it you're not working at DC as an editor? Come on, guys. Make it arty.
Make it arty.
Make it arty. All right.
Do some words and then some pictures.
Put those words in a balloon. There you go.
Yeah, we could make comics or tell people how to make comics.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do good art.
Yeah. Now, Nick Darrington is he's sharing on the Twitter. He uses his Twitter to do things. So, you know, drawing the odd Spider-Man and things like that, which is very cool. I see things like that, and I actually suspect he's not the reason for the delays, because he's, you know, doing warm-up sketches and things. but there was, he did put up a picture of Cliff fighting, Cliff Steele, Robot Man fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I noticed about this picture is it seems to harken back to issue one when Cliff is inside the Euro world, you know, inside the...
Oh, yes.
The kebab, because it looks like there's the people with the high collars in the background, and it's very reminiscent of the fighting that we saw in that issue. Mm. Unless he's actually putting up a piece of old pencils and, you know, I'm getting confused.
Well, I don't know. No, I think it might be sneak peeks of stuff to come, because I'm assuming that the recent sweaty Casey that he put up is her after she's traveling at hyperspeed, you know, piloting Danny the Ambulance.
Yeah, so that's a logical inclusion in issue 5, which we see.
And I mean, Robot Man, Cliff, he's good at fighting. He's always getting into fights. So
yeah,
I guess even though the moving shipping date keeps crushing my heart, I guess what optimist in me that remains is believing that this is upcoming art.
Yes,
we're being given sneak peeks of.
Yeah, but I mean, the schedule will probably correct somewhat, because we have an issue drawn by Mike Allred for number 7.
Mm-hmm.
And there is also a Doom Patrol one shot that we know of, which will be drawn by the Biz, Simon Bisley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to those. So,
yes. It'll anyway, come good. Yeah.
We are positive, but a little bummed.
Yeah, fair call.
Yeah. Mm. Is that the sound of ticking, though?
Sure is. Hey, look over there. It's the Doom Clock, gang.
Ooh.
Okay, so looking at the face of the Mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had was only 3 weeks ago. Issue 4 of Volume 6. Hooray.
Hooray.
And Issue 5, as we just discussed, is now a mere 3 weeks away. So supposedly, March 8th, 2017 is when the next issue will be out.
Yes.
Yes. At this point in time. Sorry, I'm bummed, but I'm being positive.
Okay. Positively bummed, that's us.
Yes, positively bummed. The last appearance of the Patrol as a team was 1 year and 27 weeks ago in All-Star Section 8, number 3, and Justice League United, number 12. The team should be back together by issue 6 of this current run, although the current solicited information we have says issue 5 is when they'll be back united, glorious, together as the Doom Patrol. If and when it ever comes out. This week in Doom Patrol history, however, going on sale for $2.50 on February 16th, 2005, with a cover date of April 2005, was Doom Patrol issue 9 from volume 4 by John Byrne. And this one was titled Freaks. And this issue showed us not just the origin of Grunt and Nudge's relationship, but also had the team take on a certain morphing monster who may have been an old friend or maybe not. Anyway, we haven't covered this specific issue yet, but we have covered the John Byrne run in general way, way back in episode 7 from February of 2015. 2 years ago, Paul.
I'm intrigued by that. Would you say that they metamorphing character?
They did indeed. Yes, they metamorphing character. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more. Mm.
Yeah, we actually have an initiative that we need to initiate to cover John Byrne's run properly. Yes.
I think we have discussed this. I think let's not say more now, but we've got we have to do that soon. It'll be a new segment, but we'll leave it for now. So
we're toying with the name. We beg you to send us to John Byrne comics, but but I don't want to tell you what it's about,
dude. Spoiler warning! Come on. Anyway, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Booster, hey bro. Gah! Bats! Booster! Together! Wow, well, this is great. This is just awesome.
You never said you and Booster were friends.
It never came up.
A consummate professional like you, friends with a dilettante like Booster?
You're both my friends, okay? You're more of a work friend, and Booster is more of a fun friend.
What's more fun than fighting crime?
Ooh, he's got you there.
Hi, this is FKA Jason's son again. I just wanted to take another minute of your time to tell you about his podcast, Silver and Gold. He and his buddy Roy Charlemagne Clary celebrate the DC Comics characters Booster Gold and Captain Atom, issue by issue, and blah, 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 blah. Listen, the real reason you want to listen to the Silver and Gold is their Throwback Thursday episodes, because I'm the star of those shows. Dad and I review the Silver Age Captain Atom stories published by Charlton Comics in the 1960s. You can find the Silver and Gold podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. You can also follow Dad Splitting Atom's blog at CaptainAtomBlog.com. We all know the real reason you'll be tuning in is to hear me criticize, celebrate the Silver Age Captain Atom in our Throwback Thursday episodes. I can't believe Dad roped me into this.
Silver and gold. Silver and gold, silver and gold. Everyone's searching for silver and gold. If you're alone, when you grow old, you'll never find comfort in silver and gold.
Okay, so it's time for Doomsplaining, and this week we are going back to the Grant Morrison era, and we're going to be looking at two issues from getting towards the end of his run, issues 58 and 59, and things are not going to go well, shall we say, for our heroes.
Yeah.
Oh, dearie me. Yeah.
But after the detour of Doomforce, we're back in the plot of what's going on.
Thank goodness. And yeah, we actually get some answers. Well, kind of, sort of. Okay, Paul, so take us into Doom Patrol number 58, please.
Take my hand, dear listener. We're going into Doom Patrol 58, which was a cover dated August 1992, but it actually came out on July 7th, 1992. But some people didn't get it that day because they were busy, so they went and got it like on July 10th. But some comic shops weren't open on Sunday, so they couldn't go to all the comic shops. Anyway, it was $1.50. It was edited by Tom Payer. It's called In the Wonderful Land of Clockwork, and it's written by Grant Morrison with guest art. I would call this guest art by Sean Phillips. So doing inks and pencils. Sean Phillips, who, what's his name? Brubaker.
Yes.
Yes.
The Fade Out. I didn't realize till halfway through reading this that it was the same guy that did the art on The Fade Out, one of my favorite things from last year.
Yeah. So Ed Brubaker, once upon a time, found Sean Phillips and stole his soul. So now Sean Phillips works exclusively with Ed Brubaker on every comic. Anyway, so lettered by John E. Workman Jr., which we like to say is Johnny Workman Jr. because it makes him sound all fun and young, and colored by Daniel Vozzo. And it has a cover by Simon Bisley, which shows Cliff Steele sort of action running. And I don't know, what's in the background?
Flames and a green wall and evilly grinning faces.
Yeah. Okay.
Kind of like an evil Mount Rushmore in the background.
Yeah. And you've got the trademark Simon Bisley giant arm. So you often like to do one arm much more bigger than the other. So Cliff Steele rocking the hugely embiggened arm. Nice cover. Anyway, so our comic opens and we see that it's Cliff Steele, but he's now a human. He's a scarred human survivor of a racing car crash. And he's living with a woman who is called Kay. So this is presumably Crazy Jane, except she says she's not his wife. And she turns to show him her real face, which involves taking off her face and opening it like a hinge. And inside are insects. Anyway, from this we see that Cliff is talking to a psychiatrist who's helping him with these feelings of distrust in reality. And he's saying it's only natural after your horrific accident. But we see that reality is changing around him, and he sees multiple levels of facade around him. So there's a woman who dances naked in a nearby apartment, but it turns out that she's got flies around her and she has a cable connected to the back of her neck, and so she's not really human. And then he watches the TV, and there's a static on the TV shows that show him vague shapes and sinister sounds, He finds a hatch in the floor and it leads to a mechanical underworld where he sees the original members of the Doom Patrol gathered. He doesn't quite recognize them, but as he gets closer, he sees they have giant beetles clinging to their backs, something that Doctor Who ripped off. And upon turning, he sees his friends have blank, featureless faces, and so they've got a large coin slot instead of eyes, nose and mouth. Through hallucination after hallucination, Cliff suffers from a hellish mechanistic nightmare in which he discovers that the world is mechanical, it's run by insects. And this may reflect some of the terrible things that Cliff has seen in recent issues, such as the ant farm under the Pentagon and the insect mesh in the alien visit. But he decides to commit suicide and end it all, and he cuts into his arm and it reveals internal gears and servos. And finally, this helps him wake up and he shakes off the delusion and he's on Danny the Street. And Willoughby Kipling, who's the sort of fake Constantine stand-in, is there, and Dorothy Spinner, they're waiting. So, you know, he's aware that Josh has been killed and horrified by that. But it seems that the chief had indeed transferred Cliff's mind into a computer in preparation for the intended test of the new artificial body that the Candlemaker took over. So the chief must have made a new body for Cliff that was waiting. And while in this disembodied state, Cliff has generated the above-mentioned false reality around himself. And Kipling rescued Cliff by putting him on a floppy disk and then putting the disk into the drive located in Cliff's robotic body. It seems that Cliff is now entirely a machine. And Kipling observes that Cliff can make backup copies of himself. And this freaks Cliff out because he actually liked having a human component as his brain.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, disturbing.
Also, floppy disk, how old is this comic?
I know. Yeah. Anyway, Danny takes the three of them to New York at the request of Kipling, and they are in pursuit of the Candlemaker. And when they arrive, they see the city is on fire. Did you read this comic, Mike?
I did, because I had forgotten what happened in it, and I'm glad I did, because, yeah, I really enjoy Sean Phillips' work, and I was kind of, yeah, halfway through everything, why is this guy's work familiar? And then I remember, oh, that's right, The Fade Out. If you haven't read The Fade Out, go and check it out, it's brilliant stuff. But I do like how his art styles, first off, it was interesting seeing his art style having grown, I guess, in the fade out from this issue, but in this issue itself, seeing the different art styles he uses between the real world and the fantasies that he's having in, I guess, the not quite entirely real world as well. That was really interesting to see. But yeah, it was kind of almost a bizarre stopgap and look into Cliff's mind.
Yes.
But the art's great as it's going through the different levels of reality. And I found it really interesting that all the references to bugs and insects made me think of even the recent volume with the bugs and the insects and, you know, Niles having the fly note on his keyboard in that
interlude.
So, it was kind of interesting references there, but yeah, this was a very, it was like, let's look inside Cliff's mind as he's rebooting after being, you know, knocked out by the Candlemaker last issue, and it kind of went, there was one bit that freaked me out where apparently human Cliff is watching the TV and the static on the TV and there's a face that appears in the TV.
Yes.
And the static, and it's like calling out for help, and just the way that looks, it's so creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going, please help me, don't go, I'm a human being. And it's like, yeah, something's not right here. But that was really well done. What did you think of it?
Yeah, Sean Phillips's art is very stylistically compatible with Richard Case's, so it doesn't, you know, it's not a jarring change.
Mm.
But there's one bit I really hate, and that's, and Grant Morrison has done this before in a comic, which is basically like a textbook on how to kill yourself. Like, he gives instructions on how to cut your wrist open properly, which I hate that that's in there.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, people don't need to know that.
No, they anyway. Don't.
Anyway, it's interesting because we know it's an hallucination. Like, there's no point in it. We go, well, this is real. Why is Cliff married? And why, you know, why is he a human? I must have, you know, oh, the comic's veered. So it never fools us for a second. which so it seems like a peculiar little detour. And it's kind of a relief when Cliff finally wakes up and we're told that, you know, all this imagination, all this world that he was living in was his brain trying to cope with being disembodied. But I am sort of relieved when it gets on with things. And Willoughby Kipling is holding the chief's head at one point and he puts it in cryogenic freeze before they go to New York to face the Candlemaker, which is good. That's a good little development.
There were a couple of shots there of Willoughby where I thought he looked like a young Terence Stamp. Especially when having a puff on his cigarette. I thought, man, it's like Constantine is Sting and Willoughby is Terence Stamp.
Yeah, he does look a bit like that. And I like the glimpses of the original Doom Patrol, even if it is in a fake reality.
Yeah, so, yeah. It's parts of his memories all being mushed together, I guess.
Yes. But it's good to move on with this plot because, I mean, it's a highly stressful point in the book to be taking a little hallucinatory detour. I would say.
True, true. So, how about I take us into issue 59?
That's fantastic, Mike. You've read my mind.
I have. There we go. Which went on sale August 4th of 1992 with a cover date of September 92. Would have cost you $1.50 back in the day for 32 pages. Pretty good. Edited by Tom Robert Payer. Written by Grant Morrison. Richard Case is back on the pencils for this one, with inks by Stan Wach. Letters by Johnny Workman Jr., colours by Daniel Vozzo. And this issue is titled Dying Inside, because we can't get enough cheeriness. So, yes, picking up straight after issue 58, we've seen that the apocalypse has arrived, and we're showing how it's affected different people. We see Danny Applewhite, a doomsday prophet on the street, and he's disappointed that the end arrives sneaking out of the shadows and not led by some heavenly chorus. And he was found dead on the floor at home, surrounded by a circle of cheap memorabilia. Meanwhile, a woman named Billy Blesser indulged in crack to disconnect from the reality of dead souls walking the streets. A little girl named Shelley Gonick drew what she'd seen, burning houses, monsters and candles, until her parents took her away to a shrink, as you do. Sex worker Adrian Cindy Hunexer realized through his lack of ability to dream that he'd somehow killed his dream self, and he was dead on the streets a week later. Another man, Dominic Peachy, decided to fight back against the ensuing chaos, and his research led him to believe he'd found the chemical composition for divination, but it just resulted in him dying in a fiery blaze. So, yeah, it's going really well. As the world burns in the chaos, we're reminded that if you want to destroy a people, first destroy its dreams, leaving nothing but dead shells and zombie cultures shambling aimlessly towards oblivion. Cheery. As Cliff and Dorothy survey the destroyed New York, Willoughby informs them that the Candlemaker is destroying the dream self, the very soul of the city, because the physical apocalypse can't start until the psychic one is underway. With everyone deprived of dreams, they'll go insane and die. So Willoughby plans to trap the Candlemaker and have Cliff kill it. Cliff replies, "Terrific! Any ideas how we do that? The chief created the body the Candlemaker is using, so how can I go up against it if I don't know what it can do?" Willoughby snaps back, "Christ, I'm not bloody omniscient. Look, we can't stop the end of the world. It's inevitable and it's happening in 2012, but we can stop it from happening at the hands of this miserable bastard." And Willoughby then demands Dorothy share everything she knows about the Candlemaker, but she knows very little about the monster. Just that it makes candles for the dead, which is why it wants to kill everyone, so it can make candles for all. Hooray.
Nah, hooray.
Makes perfect sense. Cliff is suddenly distracted by someone calling his name, and he turns to find Jane standing nearby. Cliff rushes up. He's got 100 questions for her, but she simply tells him that she's fine and explains about the Liza Radley persona taking her back to the family farm so she could deal with the pain caused by her father once and for all, as we saw in issue 56 and covered back in episode 82. Gut punch! Jane then goes on to explain, however, that now she's dealt with her painful past, she's changed. She says, "No more crazy Jane, no more superpowers, all gone." First, what the moment? One of many. Yeah. Cliff asks Jane if she's integrated all her personalities now, but she replies, no, we came to an agreement. We just had to realize we were at war with each other because we'd been hurt so badly. And now we've learned to cooperate, Cliff. We're like a kaleidoscope, every piece in place and shining. We're a team and it's fantastic. Willoughby interrupts, so you're sane, Jane, now? God help us all. After he then yells at Dorothy to stop whining about the way things are going, Willoughby complains that they still have to find the candle maker. So, of course, he takes out a small toy skull from his coat, winds up a mechanism in the back of it, puts it on the ground, and it goes chattering off down the street. Of course. Before long, Willoughby cries, got him! Candle maker's up in that building. Cliff then asks him, how do you know? Just as a body crashes through a high window and plummets to the ground. Oh, just an educated guess, Willoughby replies. So Cliff leaps into action, determined to stop this monster, but as he leaves, Willoughby and Jane argue with him about this being the best course of action, but Robot Man continues on, crashing into the building, taking a lift to the 13th floor. He steps out of the lift, noticing the blood covering the walls and the floor, and suddenly the candle maker appears in a doorway.
Thought I killed you. That was your brain I crushed, wasn't it? You're just trying to confuse me now. I killed you. Stay dead.
The monster throws Cliff into a wall, then gives chase and starts mercilessly beating our hero until a voice from behind speaks, that's enough, let him go. And both monster and mechanical man turn to find Reba standing there. Now, Rebus, we haven't seen him, this is issue 59. We last saw Rebus in issue 54, and that was back in episode 76.
That's Rebus lays an egg on the moon issue.
Yes, that's the one. So we haven't seen him in about 5 issues because he's been busy on the moon laying an egg. But he's back now, woohoo! So Rebus continues, I have no intention of repeating myself. They explained before releasing the negative being, which flies straight through the Candlemaker, leaving a massive wound in its abdomen. The Candlemaker cries out in pain and falls to the floor. Larry and Cliff rush up to each other and have a brief reunion just as the beast starts to rise back up from the floor. Robot Man charges, punching Candlemaker back down before yelling at Larry, get him, he's all yours, Larry! Rebus realizes something is very wrong because now the negative spirit is gone. Suddenly, Rebus cries out as Candlemaker strikes them right in their abdomen, lifting them up in the air. Candlemaker says,
Look, I can kill you because you're not real.
And there's a blinding blast of energy, leaving nothing of Rebus but a charred, smoking skeleton, as the Candlemaker recites,
Here comes a candle to light you to bed. Here comes a chopper to chop off your head.
And that's the end of the issue.
Wow.
Yeah. What'd you think of this one, Paul?
Well, there was a couple of Doom Patrollers still alive, so yeah, we might as well kill them all.
Yeah.
Wow. First thing first, let's talk about the cover.
Mm.
So this is another Tom Taggart 3D sculpture cover where he's built a sculpture and then taken a photo of it. And it's a very rockin' picture of Cliff with a gun.
With a Blast-O-Matic gun.
Yeah.
And yes, I've seen this cover lots of times over the years, and this is the first time ever that I've noticed that Robot Man is wearing a Batman watch.
Yes.
I don't know how I missed that detail after all these years, but it's there now. Like, yeah. What?
But yeah, a pretty fun cover on a very grim issue. So, lovely to see Richard Case back on the art.
Yes.
I like the whole, Graham Morrison's pretty good at doing this in a number of books where he shows vignettes of regular, people and the effect that some sort of apocalypse or, Doom Patrol menace is having on them. So different people act in different ways. Some people commit suicide. Some people are just terrorized. Some people know what's going on. Some people just vanish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much an apocalypse that people are feeling rather than seeing. So some people are sensitive to it, and it's basically horrific for them, and it's spreading from there. Now we get two yay moments in this issue. One is the return of Crazy Jane. Mm-hmm. Hooray! And the other is the return of Rebus. But it's interesting that they're both undercut so drastically. Like, and I feel a bit guilty as a fan of the Doom Patrol in that Jane is there and she's healed. She's integrated her personalities. She doesn't have the conflict and the, you know, the chaos of multiple personalities anymore. But it's made her impotent as far as being a hero and having powers to deal with the situation. So there's a little bit of conflict that I feel as a reader that in that, you know, Jane's all sorted out now, and it's one of the worst things in the world that members of the Doom Patrol are fixed. Like, yes. If Cliff is just a regular guy, he's not Robot Man. If, Larry Trainer doesn't have the negative energy, he's just a bloke. So the thing that made them special was their disability. Mm-hmm. And without their disabilities, they're not special and they can't deal with these issues. So, it's a good little twist that Jane is back, but she can't, you know, help. She can't intercede because she doesn't have any powers. And
then the negative spirit just vanishing after the first attack.
Yeah, so and you know Rebus we get like, the kick-ass moment of the negative spirit blasting through the Candlemaker and really sending him reeling, and then suddenly it's gone. So
yep,
yeah. So and this is something that Grant Morrison does really well, is he just keeps upping the stakes. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, okay, this will happen and this will sort this out. And he's like, nah. And he pulls the rug out from under you and said, things are worse.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! Yeah, so...
as great... I completely forgot that Rebus came back in this issue until I turned that page and they were standing there. And you're right, I had a complete yay moment. And that so very quickly went from yay to no! So, yeah, and it's kind of like, how the heck are they going to fix this? Because essentially, the literal active members of the Doom Patrol are Robot Man, Dorothy Spinner, the Eight-Faced Girl, and I guess as an ally, Willoughby Kipling.
Yeah, and that's it.
That's it. Against the Candlemaker.
Yeah, the Chief's just been beheaded and he's technically dead.
Yep. Jane's Larry's got the powers.
Yeah, Rebus has just been blasted. Jane is just a regular girl.
Yep. Joshua was dead. You know?
Joshua was dead. It's not looking good.
Yeah. Karma's been long gone.
Yeah. But, yeah, beautiful escalation of tension and compounding of the danger and the threat. So nicely structured, Grant Morrison.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Makes you want to race to the next one, doesn't it?
It does. It does. They are really good issues, but my God, it's like they have this, like the pacing between the two of them, it's kind of like where the first half of 58 is just spent exploring inside Cliff's mind, and then he finally comes to it, it's like, oh shit, right, I've got to go save the world. And then it's like, oh, hooray, we're here. We're going to fight for... Oh, our allies are back. Oh, they've got no powers. Oh, shit, the Candlemaker.
Yeah, but it's... I mean, Willoughby Kipling was charged by the Knights of the Templar to help the Doom Patrol with the impending apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good that he's just puts them in the right spot and doesn't have a clue what to do next.
Yeah.
So he's a little bit like a crap version of the Phantom Stranger. Shows up, gives a tiny bit of guidance, and then buggers off.
And but, then, you know, insults and the others and, you know, yells at them and tells Dorothy to stop whining and, you know, lovely guy.
It's interesting that he says, you know, this isn't the end of the world because it's going to end in 2012.
Yeah.
So this guy's just trying to do his, you know, end the world a bit earlier.
Yeah.
And that was a theme that was running through Grant Morrison's work around this period was 2012 being the end of the world. So this was something in the background of The Invisibles. But I believe Grant Morrison gave up on the idea when he heard they were making a disaster movie called 2012. And he was just like, well, it's that far into the popular consciousness. I can't talk about it anymore. It's not cool.
Oh, poor Grant.
Yeah. And the, one other Grant thing that I forgot to mention from the first issue, 58, was Chris Callahan in his book about Grant Morrison's writings asked Grant, he said, what was with all the insect motif in that? And he said, I just thought the dominant species on the book should be, on the planet should be represented.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Bugs are everywhere. Think about it.
This is true. This is
yeah. True. One way or another, the bugs are going to get us. Happy thoughts. Dying inside.
Yes. Oh, God. All right. I think we've cheerfully doomsplained that as best as we're going to.
Yay.
Huzzah.
It's almost time for bed, but before we do that, it's time for the Mailbag of Doom. And we're going to open with an email that we received from Ange, who we call Dr. Ange. And he wrote to us about our last episode, which was on Doom Force. And he said, Doom Force, when this book came out, I had just graduated college and was about to head off to med school. I had waded deep into serious comics like Hellblazer, Shade, Doom Patrol, Animal Man, etc. But I still had a toe in superheroes. So I did sample Spawn, Youngblood, and Savage Dragon. And I quickly realized most of Image wasn't for me back then. I hung around with Savage Dragon for a bit, but it quickly derailed into splash pages, thongs, and nipples, so I left. In thongs right. and nipples. In many ways, I look at this as an important moment in my maturation as a human being. A younger aged Ange would have been more than happy to read a thong and nipples book, but the more erudite Ange was looking for more in a comic than just that. Hooray for me. I just want to add, in Australia, we call thongs, what Americans call thongs, we call a G-string. And thongs is the word that we use for flip-flops.
Mm,
yeah. So thongs and nipples is quite a weird concept.
Now, that's an awesome day at the beach.
Flip-flops and boobies.
Crikey. Anyway.
As for Doomforce, like Mike, I liked it more when I read it in prep for this show than I did back then. I guess being able to look back at this period in comics with the passage of time made the parody that much more hysterical. I think Image was riding high when this came originally out. Maybe too soon for a humorous look. Yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. But I think when you're in the midst of it, it's hard to see how silly it all is till you step back a bit. So yeah, you're right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, now we will segue into the question of the week. So, but I'll put Andrew's answer first because he stuck it in an email, so that sort of gives him some sort of cue jumping powers. Anyway.
Hear that, folks? Emails get you preferential treatment.
They do, yep. So this week, the question of the week is, where would you want to be locked in overnight? And Ange said, as for the question of the week about an overnight lock-in, I would say the Fortress of Solitude, a weapons room, the history rooms, the interplanetary zoo, and a holographic all-knowing space dad. Sign me up. Now, this sounds like the pre-crisis Fortress of Solitude, not the boring one with just crystals everywhere.
Right.
If I had to pick a second choice, I'd say the Legion headquarters, giant monitors, mission monitor board, Ayla Rance's private headquarters, a 3D holographic D&D game, the Hall of Heroes, and the trophy room. I'm not very surprised by your answer, Ange.
Right. Meanwhile, over on Twitter, we heard from Mario at Luther Lang, and the place they'd like to be locked up in overnight is the Fortress of Solitude as well.
And then we heard from Fractures, who's Rogue Frack on the Twitter, and he said the Legion of Superheroes headquarters, another vote for each of those.
Mm-hmm.
Then he carried on a little bit.
Yes, because then he said, he chimed in with, after that, the fifth biggest mansion in the DC universe.
I like that answer.
That's a good one. Shout out to Mento, because Frack's a big Mento fan.
Yeah, and then he said the Parliament of Trees. And then he said, although not sure you could get locked in there, so a bit of a swamp thing time. I don't know why you'd want to get locked. Stay there anyway.
Yeah, similar to the Hall of Justice. Although, you know, if they've got a trophy room, that could be interesting. Yeah.
And Frank continues the JLA Watchtower. Yeah, you could look at Earth. That would be nice.
Yeah. And then he said the JLA satellite. Now, is that different from the Watchtower?
Yeah, different eras.
Right.
The satellite was free floating. The Watchtower was actually on the moon.
Ah, oh, yes, of course, right. Yes,
yep. We heard from Keith G. Baker, who's
someone who wasn't Frack?
Yeah, I know. Someone snuck in with an answer. KG Bunk on the Twitter, and he said a brewery. Know where his priorities lie.
Oh, look, it's Fractures again. And this time he said Xanadu. Garvey should get that reference. Yes, I may be a fan of Xanadu the movie because I may have had a boyhood crush on Olivia Newton-John.
Is that a place where nobody dared to go?
Unless they were wearing roller skates. That's right. Yes.
The Frack Fest gets broken up again. Aaron Long, he juiced 005, and he said, oh, that's a good answer. No, it's not. He said, that room, what is in that Harry Potter movie where the X-Men trained? You know, the Death Star.
Actually, I don't mind that one.
Yeah.
Oh, look, it's Frack again. this time, he said he'd like to get locked up overnight in Kunlun from Immortal Iron Fist. Now, that would be cool, fisting. You know, train for a night to become the Iron Fist. Yeah.
Bit of iron fisting. Frack continues.
Does he?
And he said, Serenity.
All right.
Serenity now.
Or overnight, at least in this case. Oh, look, it's Frack again. This time he said the USS Enterprise. Okay, that one would be cool.
Would it? They're all uptight. I don't know. Jabba's Palace. Another one from Frack.
Complete opposite of uptight. It's Frack again. And this time he's written the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Huh. Then we heard from Fractors.
Right.
Is it the Death Star? He's just naming things now.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he is. Because he's written back again and he said Stark Tower. Right. Who else did we hear from, Paul?
We heard from Fractures. He said Parker Industries.
We got a tweet reply from Fractures, who this week is called Rogue Frack. And he wants to get locked up overnight in Xavier's School for Gifted... .. I don't know whether that's cut something out there or whether he just was calling it something...
I don't think he could be bothered typing the rest of that. Anyway, we had Fractures, who said the helicarrier.
Right. It's Fractures again, and he said Bellerive. Why would you want to get locked up in Bellerive?
He's just naming places now.
He's just naming shit now. He's just making shit
up.
He
came back again and said Weapon X.
You want to get locked up in Weapon X. You mean Weapon X the program or Weapon X the person?
He wants to be locked inside Wolverine.
He's the best at doing what now? He also wants to get locked up overnight in Danny the Ambulance. Okay, that's kind of cool, but also kind of pandering.
Yeah. Then he said the Justice League Cave Headquarters.
Yeah, okay. It's Fractures again. And he wants to get locked up overnight in Wayne Manor.
And then he thought about some more and said the Doom Patrol Cave Headquarters in the room filled. That's the same as the JLA headquarters in a cave. It's the same cave. It's
exactly the same.
Yeah. But he wants to be in the room with giant monitors.
Unless he also wants to be in the Justice League Antarctica headquarters.
Oh, thank goodness we heard from someone else. We heard from Big Tim Styles.
Hooray!
Hey. And he said, in this current heat wave, I'd like to be locked in a meat freezer. Might even get some sleep.
I completely empathise with that. For those who aren't aware, this past weekend here in Australia, it's been like the hottest weekend on record, I think. Averaging 40 degrees centigrade everywhere or something. I know I've had very little sleep.
Hey.
So, yeah. Who else do we hear from? It's Frack. And this time he said 22 Acacia Avenue. I'm too tired. That one's gone over my head.
It's an Iron Maiden reference.
Is it? Okay.
Anyway, the JLA trophy. Frack, you've already said the cave and the headquarters, and now you want the trophy room within the cave. You going to name all the rooms inside the cave or whatever?
Don't encourage him. It's Frack again, and this time he says the Flash Museum. Right.
And it's him again, the Legion of Doom headquarters.
Oh, and it's again, and this time it's the Dark Tower.
And then he got thinking about towers and said, oh, the Tower of Fate. Frack.
Oh, hang on. Now he wants to go to Asgard.
And the Avengers Mansion.
Oh, right. So now he's going over to the Marvel Universe. Because now he wants to go to the Baxter Building overnight.
And then he added Nakatomi Plaza. So.
Oh, okay.
Die Hard.
Right. Yeah. Because that'd be... Well, unless it was the same night that McClane was in the building, you know, it'd be just an office building, wouldn't it?
Well, why would you... Yeah, maybe he just wants to be in an office building overnight. Or maybe he wants to be terrorized by terrorists. Or thieves. Are they terrorists? Not really.
God. Oh, look, we heard from someone else. It's from Nicholas, at NickRDE on Twitter. And he would like to get locked up overnight in a comic book store or a donut shop. Both excellent choices.
We heard from Bud A, who's RBudF09, our friend, and he said, I'm really jealous of the guy who got locked in a sixth-floor bookshop in London. It was just about closing time, but he just had to be.
Oh, well.
Don't know that story.
Oh, look, it's Jonathan Dick, at Real Last Name on Twitter, and he said he'd like to get locked up overnight in Guillermo del Toro's house. I would just stare at the original Mignola and write some artwork he owns. That'd be cool.
Yeah, I didn't know that about Guillermo del Toro.
Mm-hmm.
We heard from Bobgar Ornelis at Slermo, and he said, fantasy answer, invited guest in Olga Kurylenko's bedroom. Who's that, Mike?
I think she's a model, a supermodel, I think. The name is vaguely familiar. We'll Google her after this.
I don't know if I should look that up.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, it's a woman.
Well, the name Olga kind of gives it away.
It's a woman in, I don't know, she's...
Wasn't she married to Mel Gibson? Or his partner? Up until recently?
I've got no idea. She's a fairly attractive young lady, so that's one thing. He said, realistic fantasy answer, Dreams Library? Oh, yeah, great answer.
Oh, is in the same.
Yeah,
okay.
So in Sandman, there was a library which is filled with all the books that weren't written by people who should have written things, or the things that they wrote in their dreams, or the books that never got to be written.
Yes.
Yeah. And he said, reality answer, somewhere with a toilet. Somewhere that is a toilet. No.
Look, nothing wrong with a bit of practicality. Oh, look, we heard from our friend Kevin, who this week is called We Met Lever Chain Kit, otherwise known as at Ostrakus1 on Twitter, and he said he'd like to get locked up overnight in Grant Morrison's brain. That would be fun times.
Fun scary times. I wouldn't be game for that. Martin Gray on the Twitter, our friend from Edinburgh. He said, oh, no question. The DC... Oh, no, he's... Oh, no question. Not, oh, no question. Sounds like he doesn't want to answer. Commas, they're important. The DC Comics Library with snacks. No, Martin, you cannot take snacks there because it's a library filled with precious books. It's got like really, really, really old, valuable comics, and you cannot read them with snacks.
Yeah.
You get fingerprints on them.
Maybe this Martin guy's new to reading comics. I don't know.
He doesn't know nothing about comics.
If he doesn't know nothing, he must know something. But he still doesn't know enough. Anyway, oh, look, we finally also heard from Ryan Daly at RyanDaly01 on the Twitters. He would like to stay in Castle Anthrax from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Right.
Insert clip here.
Yes.
I think Ryan wins the answers with that one.
Oh, what? Not frack? Oh, you're one of those quality over quantity people, are you? All right, Paul, where would you like to get locked up overnight?
It may just be where I'm at right now, but just a mattress shop would be good.
Wow, okay.
I just want to get a good night's sleep at the moment.
Right.
What about you, Mike?
As tempting as a mattress shop with air conditioning would be, I'm kind of similar to Mark Gray's. I'm going to say, I guess, the DC Archives. And just spend an entire night just wandering through and looking at all the old comics and, you know, all the original artwork. And just, that would be a fantastic night for me.
Huh.
I could sleep later on, somehow.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that would be a fun night.
Hmm.
Well, there we go. That was quite a mailbag. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Frack.
One hell of a mailbag you got there.
Oh, dearie me. Well, look, I think we might wrap things up there. We've had a massive mailbag. We've had some massive things happen in the issues we've looked at. And next time on the show, we're actually going to take a week off. So we'll be back in 2 weeks, and we're going to be continuing on with the Morrison era. We're going to be looking at issues 60 and 61, edging ever closer to the end of the Morrison time on the book. And getting closer to see what happens with the team and the cattle. Oh my God. And we will also have a question of the week for you. What is that question of that week, Paul?
We would like to know, in preparation for your death, what is the most interesting thing on your bucket list?
Yes, we're all about helping here. We want to help you prepare.
And Fractures, just letting you know, one answer this time.
Yeah, one answer off, per mate. Person, please.
We're and cutting you off, matey.
Yeah, and you guys get preferential treatment. But don't put more than one answer in your email, Frack. Okay. Oh, dear me. All right, we'll sign off there. As always, you can reach us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can also check out the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And you can check out friend of the show, Doug Zavisha's excellent related posts on his blog, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. All right. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, listeners.
Thank you, Mike.
We'll get out of here. We'll see you again in 2 weeks for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom. Got your Candlemaker voice ready?
Thought I'd killed you. That was your brain I crushed, wasn't it?
Yeah, that'll do.
Can you do the Candlemaker ordering lunch?
Sorry?
Can you do the Candlemaker ordering lunch?
Hello, is that Pizza Hut? Pizza Hut.
I have to do it without laughing.
Is that Pizza Hut? I want one Super Supreme with anchovies on half. Half.
And there's our outtake.
I will have the 24 chicken McNuggets for $10 now.
Dearie me.
It's a beautiful thing, Mike.